Good morning, my friends. As our friend Rick Martin would say, this is John Chapman filling in for my boy, for my business partner, for my teacher, Paul Hutchings. He's not feeling very well today, and he has actually asked me to step in for him. So I will be the MC for the host, the MC for the call today, and we are going to be rocking and rolling. I was actually going over today's reading, and one of the things that, the focus of today's reading is going to be on desire. What developing a burning desire can do for you, and specifically how it was that the author's son used it and how the author used it to make Mother Nature herself bend to her will, which is actually very amazing when you come to think about it. So the bottom line here, guys, is that if I mess up this recording, you will have to excuse me. This is my very first time hosting the call. As a matter of fact, before we even get into the information, let me just give you a little bit of insight as to my own personal desires. As many of you know, when I was a child, I had a really bad stuttering problem. It was so bad that at one point I had chosen, I made the decision to not speak to people, only because it was so embarrassing. It would literally take me 4 to 5 minutes to get out one sentence. And when I say one sentence, I mean like, one sentence. That is literally how I spoke. And it wasn't until I personally developed a burning desire to be able to communicate effectively and without stammering did my reality change. I put myself in uncomfortable situations that dictated that I be able to communicate. You know, I would go into church plays. I would go into plays that held that were held at school or in college, and you know, thinking back on it, it's just it is amazing the power that developing a burning desire can have over your life. So in today's reading, that's one of the thoughts that I really just want to get across, is that if your burning desire is to create success within your network marketing business, within your life, within your personal relationships, is that if you focus on it, that if you truly and intently focus on it, you will have the ability to manifest anything that you want in your life. And that right there is the bottom line. So without any more hesitation, let's go ahead and get into today's reading. Desire outwits Mother Nature. As a fitting climax to this chapter, I wish to introduce one of the most unusual persons I have ever known. I first saw him 24 years ago, a few minutes after he was born. He came into the world without any physical sign of ears, and the doctor admitted, when pressed for an opinion, that the child might be deaf and mute for life. I challenged the doctor's opinion. I had the right to do so. I was the child's father. I, too, reached a decision and rendered an opinion, but I expressed the opinion silently and hear and speak. In the secrecy of my own heart, I decided that my son would hear and speak. Nature could send me a child without ears, but nature could not induce me to accept the reality of the affliction. How powerful is that? Nature could not induce me to accept the reality of the affliction. In my own mind, I knew that my son would hear and speak. How? I was sure that there must be a way, and I knew I would find it. I thought of the worlds of the immortal Emerson. The whole course of things goes to teach us faith. We need only obey. There is guidance for each of us, and by lowly listening, we shall hear the right word. The right word? Desire. More than anything else, I desired that my son should not be a deaf mute. From that desire, I never receded, not for a second. Many years previously, I had written, our only limitations are those we set up in our own minds. For the first time, I wondered if that statement were true. Lying on the bed in front of me was a newly born child without the natural equipment of hearing. Even though he might hear and speak, he was obviously disfigured for life. Surely this was a limitation which that child had not set up in his own mind. What could I do about it? Somehow, I would find a way to transplant into that child's mind my own burning desire for ways and means of conveying sound to his brain without the aid of ears. As soon as that child was old enough to cooperate, I would fill his mind so completely with a burning desire to hear that nature would, by methods of her own, translate it into physical reality. All this thinking took place in my own mind, but I spoke it to no one. Every day I renewed the pledge I had made to myself not to accept a deaf mute for a son. As he grew older and began to take notice of things around him, we observed that he had a slight degree of hearing. When children usually begin talking, he made no attempt to talk and no attempt to speak. But we could tell by his actions that he could hear certain sounds slightly. That was all I wanted to know. I was convinced that if he could hear even slightly, he might develop still greater hearing capacity. Then something happened which gave me hope. It came from an entirely unexpected source. We had bought a Victrola. When the child heard the music for the first time, he went into ecstasies and promptly appropriated the machine. He soon showed a preference for certain records. Among them is A Long Way to Tipperary. On one occasion, he played that piece over and over. For almost 2 hours, standing in front of the Victrola with his teeth clamped on the edge of the case. The significance of this self-formed habit of his did not become clearer to us until years afterward, for we had never heard of the principle of bone conduction of sound at the time. Shortly after he appropriated the Victrola, I discovered that he could hear me quite clearly when I spoke with my lips touching his mastoid bone or at the base of his brain. These discoveries placed in my possession the necessary media by which I began to translate into reality my burning desire to help my son develop hearing and speech. By the time he was making stabs at speaking certain words, the outlook was far from encouraging, but desire, backed by faith, knows no such word as impossible. Having determined that he could hear the sound of my voice plainly, I began to immediately to transfer to his mind the desire to hear and speak. I soon discovered that the child enjoyed bedtime stories, so I went to work creating stories designed to develop in him self-reliance, imagination, and a keen desire to hear and to be normal. There was one story in particular which I emphasized by giving it some new and dramatic coloring each time it was told. It was designed to plant in his mind the thought that his affliction was not a liability, but an asset of great value. Despite the fact that all the philosophy I had examined clearly indicated that every adversity brings with it a seed of an equivalent advantage, I must confess that I had not the slightest idea how this affliction could ever become an asset. However, I continued my practice of wrapping that philosophy in bedtime stories, hoping the time would come when he would find some plan by which this handicap could be made to serve some useful purpose. Reason told me plainly that there was no adequate compensation for the lack of ears and natural hearing equipment. Desire, backed by faith, pushed reason aside and inspired me to carry on. As I analyze the experience in retrospect, I can see now that my son's faith in me had much to do with the astounding results. He did not question anything that I told him. I sold him the idea that he had a distinct advantage over his older brother and that this advantage would reflect itself in many ways. For example, the teachers in his school would observe that he had no ears, and because of this, they would show him special attention and treat him with extraordinary kindness. They always did. His mother saw to that. By visiting the teachers and arranging with them to give the child the extra attention necessary. I sold him the idea, too, that when he became old enough to sell newspapers, his older brother had already become a newspaper merchant, he would have a big advantage over his brother for the reason that people would pay him extra money for his wares, because they could see that he was a bright, industrious boy, despite the fact he had no ears. We could notice that gradually the child's hearing was improving. Moreover, he had not the slightest tendency to be self-conscious because of his affliction. When he was about 7, he showed the first signs, he showed the first evidence that our method of servicing his mind was bearing fruit. Now, this one story right here, this is one of my favorite stories in the whole book, right here. For several months, he begged for the privilege of selling newspapers, but his mother would not give her consent. She was afraid that his deafness made it unsafe for him to go out on the street alone. Finally, he took matters into his own hands. One afternoon, when he was left at home with the servants, he climbed through the kitchen window, shinnied to the ground, and set out on his own. He borrowed 6 cents in capital from the neighborhood shoemaker, invested it in papers, sold out, reinvested, and kept repeating until late in the evening. After balancing his accounts and paying back the 6 cents he had borrowed from his banker, he had a net profit of 42 cents. When he got home that night, we found him in bed, asleep, with his money tightly clenched in his hand. His mother opened his hand, removed the coins, and cried. Of all things, crying over her son's first victory seemed so inappropriate. My reaction was the reverse. I laughed heartily, for I knew that my endeavor to plant in the child's mind an attitude of faith in himself had been successful. His mother saw in his first business venture a little deaf boy who had gone out into the streets and risked his life to earn money. I saw a brave, ambitious, self-reliant little businessman whose stock in himself had been increased 100% because he had gone into business on his own initiative and won. The transaction pleased me because I knew that he had given evidence of a trait of resourcefulness that would go with him all through life. Later events proved this to be true. When his older brother wanted something, he would lie down on the floor, kick his feet in the air, and cry for it and get it. When the little deaf boy wanted something, he would plan a way to earn the money, then buy it for himself. He still follows that plan. Truly, my own son has taught me that handicaps can be converted into stepping stones on which one may climb towards some worthy goal unless they are accepted as obstacles and used as alibis. The little deaf boy went through the grades, high school and college, without being able to hear his teachers, excepting when they shouted loudly at close range. He did not go to a school for the deaf. We would not permit him to learn sign language. We were determined that he should live a normal life and associate with normal children, and we stood by that decision, although it cost us many heated debates with school officials. While he was in high school, he tried an electrical hearing aid, but it was of no value to him, due, we believed, to a condition that was disclosed when the child was 6 by Dr. J. Gordon Wilson of Chicago, when he operated on one side of the boy's head and discovered that there was no natural hearing equipment. During his last week in college, 18 years after the operation, something happened which marked the most important turning point of his life. Through what seemed to be mere chance, he came into possession of another electrical hearing device, which was sent to him on trial. He was slow about testing it due to his disappointment with a similar device. Finally, he picked the instrument up and more or less carelessly placed it on his head, hooked up the battery, and lo and behold, as if by a stroke of magic, his lifelong desire for normal hearing became a reality. For the first time in his life, he heard practically as well as any person with normal hearing. God moves in mysterious ways, his wonders to perform. Overjoyed because of the changed world which had been brought to him through this hearing device, he rushed to the telephone, called his mother, and heard her own voice perfectly. The next day, he plainly heard the voices of his professors in class for the first time in his life. Previously, he could only hear them when they shouted at short range. He heard the radio. He heard the talking pictures. For the first time in his life, he could converse freely with other people without the necessity of their having to speak loudly. Truly, he had come into possession of a changed world. We had refused to accept nature's error, and by persistent desire, we had induced nature to correct that error through the only practical means available. Desire had commenced to pay dividends, but the victory was not yet complete. The boy still had yet to find a definite and practical way to convert his handicap into an equivalent asset. And give me one moment, folks. This is going to be, we're going to go ahead and, all right, we're not to the point, because this is a very long reading. We are going to cut out part of it. Hardly realizing the significance of what had already been accomplished, but intoxicated with the joy of his newly discovered world of sound, he wrote a letter to the manufacturer of the hearing aid, enthusiastically describing his experience. Something in his letter, something perhaps which was not written on the lines but back of them, caused the company to invite him to New York. When he arrived, he was escorted to the factory, and while talking with the chief engineer, telling him about his changed world, a hunch, an idea, or an inspiration, call it what you will, flashed into his mind. It was this impulse of thought which converted his affliction into an asset, destined to pay dividends in both money and happiness to thousands for all time to come. This part is interesting because it states, it was this impulse of thought which converted his affliction into an asset, destined to pay dividends in both money and happiness to thousands for all time to come. You know, just a point to ponder is that if you have a fear of public speaking, if you have a fear of standing out in the crowd, if you have any type of a fear, you know, rather than fearing it, because we all know and we've all been taught that fear is nothing more than a belief, why not change the meaning of that fear? So that when that fear hits you and you feel that little tingle in the pit of your stomach, instead of feeling fear, you feel excitement because you know that you're about to reach the next level. As my son would say, you're about to reach the final level and feel the glow. So that's just an FYI. The sum and substance of that impulse of thought was this. It occurred to him that he might be able to help the millions of deafened people who go through life without the benefit of hearing devices, if he could find a way to tell them the story of his changed world. Then and there, he reached a decision to devote the remainder of his life to rendering useful service to the hard of hearing. For an entire month, he carried on an intensive research during which he analyzed the entire marketing system of the manufacturer of the hearing device and created ways and means of communicating with the hard of hearing all over the world for the purpose of sharing with them his newly discovered changed world. When this was done, he put in writing a 2-year plan based upon the findings. When he presented the plan to the company, he was instantly given a position for the purpose of carrying out his ambition. Now, we're going to go ahead and skip forward to the point where it says, there was no doubt in my mind that Blair would have been a deaf-mute all his life if his mother and I had not managed to shape his mind as we did. The doctor who attended at his birth told us confidentially the child might never hear or speak. A few weeks ago, Dr. Irving Voorhees, a noted specialist on such cases, examined Blair very thoroughly. He was astounded when he learned how well my son hears and speaks, and he said his examination indicated that, theoretically, the boy should not be able to hear at all, but the lad does hear, despite the fact that x-ray pictures show there is no opening in the skull whatsoever from where his ears should be to the brain. And give me one moment, because this is a very long reading. When I plan in his mind the desire to hear and talk and live as a normal person, There went with that the impulse some strange influence which caused nature to become bridge builder and span the gulf of silence between his brain and the outer world by some means which the keenest medical specialists have not been able to interpret. It would be sacrilege for me to even conjecture as to how nature performed this miracle. It would be unforgivable if I neglected to tell the world as much as I know of the humble part I assumed in the strange experience. It was my duty and a privilege to say I believe, and not without reason, that nothing is impossible to the person who backs desire with enduring faith. Verily, a burning desire has devious ways of transmuting itself into physical equivalent. Blair desired normal hearing. Now he has it. He was born with a handicap which might easily have sent one with a less defined desire to the street with a bundle of pencils and a tin cup. That handicap now promises to serve as the medium by which he will render useful service to many millions of hard of hearing, also to give him useful employment at adequate financial compensation the remainder of his life. The little white lies I planted in his mind when he was a child by leading him to believe this affliction would become a great asset which he could capitalize has justified itself. Verily, there is nothing right or wrong which belief plus burning desire cannot make real. These qualities are free to everyone. And that is where we're going to go ahead and stop today's reading. Let me go ahead and see if I can unmute the line here, and let's get the mastermind portion of our call rolling. Give me one moment. All right, folks. Let's go ahead and hear our first call. Our first caller. Go ahead and hit star six.
Good morning, sir.
Good morning, Melvin. What if you
can be very strong about who they are and what they're about? I'm not even sure the desire has to be as strong as it needs to be there, just based on the way a person conducts themselves. Says what they mean what they say, and follow through on it. I would imagine that could work to a great degree, the same as what a strong desire could do. But having that desire, having the faith, and willing to take the action, putting those three things together can truly bring amazing results. And I think Spud Webb. For those of you that aren't familiar with Spud Webb, he became a professional ball player, basketball player, and his height. How short he was. Or there's this baseball player who had one arm, who became a professional ball player. You take somebody like Louis Armstrong and his voice, he would probably be with a strong desire and. And that's available for each and every single one of us to be able to pull off. And as far as fear, you were talking about the word fear. Yeah, if we look at that as an opportunity, that's just anything that we fear or that bothers us, really, if we just look at it as an opportunity and we take it on as such, we're only going to end up being a greater person in the process. So, other than that, I just like to say that a little different from what we're talking about today. I want everybody to realize today is 12/12/12. It's the 12th day of the year. It's the it's just a very unique number in itself. And for those of you that like to meditate or meditation, there's probably going to be millions of people meditating today at 12/12 on this day. So we're talking about 12 minutes after 12 on the date 12/12/12. Some unique significance in all of that. And with that, back to you, and thank you.
All right, Mel. Wow, brother. You really hit on some fantastic points. Spud Webb, if folks don't know about Spud Webb, I think the guy's about 5'10", maybe even 5'9", but this cat, through a burning desire, to play NBA ball actually was a factor in a lot of those games. His burning desire to win, his burning desire to play would not allow his height to be a handicap. And, you know, this was a guy who was out there playing against 6'4", 6'5", 6'7", guys and doing a really good job. So great point. Next caller.
Hi.
Good morning, John.
Good morning.
Okay.
This is Stephen Clark from Maine.
Hey, Mr. Clark, give me one moment. There was a young lady who had jumped out just
Yes, hi. This is Karen.
Of course.
I just wanted to clarify something that the gentleman said before, which I think is very interesting. I'm new to the call, but I have been studying books like Napoleon Hill's books, As a Man Thinketh, and The Laws of Success for at least about a year now. And I have something to say about, he said about constitution. And I really believe that constitution is just a conditioned belief in yourself. It's just like that. He's just well-adjusted. Always been, but I believe that it all begins with that establishment within yourself. What you see around you, you just naturally believe. And some people will call that, your constitution, but it's actually just your choice that you started with probably from very early on. You just naturally believed well. And so I just wanted to share that. And thank you so much for the reading, it was wonderful. And I don't know how to star six myself off again. How do I mute myself again?
You actually play hit star six.
Okay, very good. Thank you.
Thank you, Karen. And you know what? Constitution and well-established beliefs. One of the things that I've done with my own kids, with my children, is that. I'm a very open and honest person and I'm outgoing, and I transferred that belief that people are friends, that people are good, to my own children, so that when we are out and about, sometimes you see kids who are very, very shy, who are very withdrawn. And, you know, that might be for a number of reasons. And then you see the kids that are outgoing, that'll walk up to you, shake your hand, say hi, how's it going, and just be very open. And that is part of molding your child's character. If you, like Napoleon Hill did, if you impart your beliefs upon your children, more than likely, they are going to pick up those belief patterns because that's all they know. All right, Steve, you're up, brother.
I just want to say good morning to everybody. And, John, the story that you shared about yourself before you started reading, it took a lot of confidence in yourself to be able to share that with us. And that in itself, that story that you shared with us, sums up everything that was talked about in this chapter that you read today. And what a great job you did, by the way. You felt the passion, you felt the inspiration behind everything you read this morning. Great job. You know, I just want to kind of share my own story with you guys. When I was in sixth grade, I was diagnosed with a reading and writing disability. Not necessarily dyslexia, but I have a hard time reading and I have as well as writing. 6 years it took them to diagnose me with that. And this was my own personal choice, by the way. For 2 years, from sixth grade to eighth grade, I let it hinder me. I took advantage of that and got the special treatment from the teachers and, you know, so on and so forth. And then in high school, I had made a decision. My freshman year in high school, I had made a decision. I wasn't going to let it hinder me. I wasn't going to let it hold me back. When I was my freshman year in high school, I had what was considered a seventh grade reading level, and by the time my sophomore year came to the beginning of starting school, I had already caught up with my classmates, and with that burning desire, I pushed through high school. I'm in the process of getting my associate's degree in business management, and it's that burning desire that I was not going to let what I had been diagnosed with hinder my success or hinder my future. And it's everything that John talked about before he read this morning, this chapter that we had read, and all the stories that you hear on a daily basis on this call of people having that burning desire to accomplish just about anything you want to accomplish in life, it all starts coming together if you're on this call long enough. You start putting the puzzle pieces together, and that puzzle will become a picture of what your life will be with that burning desire. And if you implement it and you take advantage of it, and you just move forward with your life. Don't let other people hold you back. Despite what you were told when you were kids, my mom actually told me I would never amount to anything. I would never graduate high school, all that stuff. But I graduated high school. I'm going to amount to something. I am amounting to something. And, just keep pushing forward. Regardless of what your past is, don't let your past hinder your future. And I tell a lot of people that I talk to over the phone on a daily basis the same exact thing. If you let your past control your future, you're gonna constantly be living in the past. So I just wanted to share that with you guys. I feel it will be an inspiration to some people if they know exactly what I've experienced, if they have kids that have been diagnosed with it, or if they themselves have been diagnosed with it. You can get through it. You can use it as an advantage, as a tool to keep moving forward. Back to you, John.
Steve, you rock, brother. I mean that from the very deepest part of my heart. You freaking rock. Just hearing more and more of your story has me so pumped up. You have no idea. That's one of the advantages, folks. You come on this call on a daily basis, and you hear the stories of true people, of struggle, of triumph, of life. These are the stories. Facts tell, stories sell. Well, so when you're in that situation, Jim Rohn says, collect stories. Because when you're in that situation, when the time calls for it, you want to have a deep reserve of stories to call upon to convey the richness of life, to convey what it is that you are looking to get across. That is what is going to attract people to you, because you understand, and maybe you haven't experienced the shame of not being able to speak. Maybe you haven't experienced the shame of being in high school reading at a seventh grade level, but you've been able to touch it just a little bit. And being able to touch that just a little bit is going to enable you, is going to empower you to relate to someone. And maybe it's just that little bit of ability of being able to relate that is going to be able to bridge the gap, to make the connection so that you can bless them in other ways. Next caller.
Morning, John. Bill Wentz here.
Good morning, Bill. How can you bless us today, my friend?
Well, first of all, you've blessed me. I have never heard your story about the stuttering problem at all. And I remember one time I made a comment on the call. It sounded like you're out of breath, and I thought because maybe you're afraid to talk or something. And then Paul says, "Oh no, he's been around for a while." I felt kind of foolish, but I didn't know your story, and it just really I've been following a lot of your messages on the emails and everything, but I've never heard your story, And that is absolutely incredible, you know, overcoming that, because that's not an easy thing to overcome. But it just really made me even, you know, not idolize you, but really, I mean, just I really sink into the things that you've done, the accomplishments that you've made. I watched you on the Hangout last night, and, you know, you really inspire me, and I'm so glad you're doing the call today. And I want to thank you for all the contributions you've made to help me. And also, I just want to add one more thing about the 1212, which is really important, is that this is the last time that any of us on this call will ever see where the month and the date and the year will all be the same. It will never happen again in our lifetime. So it really is important that 1212 today, to take that time to meditate, whatever we need to do, to think about what we want to accomplish for the year 2013. And again, thanks a lot, John, for all you do. Back to you.
Hey, Bill. You know what? I just want to say thank you, brother. I really, really mean that. Thank you. Your kind words mean a lot to me. Folks, you know, Bill had referenced a hangout that we had done last night. I actually did it with another one of our callers, my business partner, Mike Hobbs. And just being able to do that particular hangout with Mike and with some other folks is just a blessing, you know. To have come from a point where you can't speak, and to feel that rush of heat come to your head when someone calls on you to speak in public, in front of a group. Even to this very day, I woke up like two or three times last night thinking about this call. And it's funny. one of the things that I was doing as I was going over the information for today's call is that it occurred to me from the quote that I had read the other day, fear is nothing more than a belief. So if I do not believe that this is fear, and instead I transmute that energy and I feel that it's opportunity, that's how I was able to come out and spit fire on the track. So, you know, I really want to hammer that home, guys and gals. Use that fear. Transmute the fear into energy, into useful, productive energy. Next caller.
Hi, John.
Good morning, my friend.
Good morning, Rick. You were beaming.
Good morning, John. This is Tracy.
Hey, good morning, Tracy from California. And just let me say, I love the energy that you put out. I've never seen you. I've never met you. But, man, I know that you are someone special.
Oh, thank you. I really look up to you, too, because you have a speech. Well, you've got the stuttering, but I've always had a speech problem. Ever since before I was in school, I had to be put in speech. Because I've shared my story before on this call, but I'm going to say it again. Because I had to be put in speech because I was dyslexic. And something in my brain did not connect the way it was supposed to. And so the words that people were telling me didn't come out the same way that so they would make sense to other people. And like you were saying, it took you 45 minutes to make one sentence. That was me too. So, but it wasn't until I was in elementary school when my mom figured out that she was dyslexic. All her life, she was told she was stupid. And I think that happens to a lot of people, that they think that just because they have a disability or something's wrong with them, that they're not good enough, that they're not as good as other people. But the truth is that everybody has a problem. it's not as obvious as speaking or as a physical disability, but I think that everybody has some hurdle they need to overcome to become the person that they truly desire to be. And another thing I wanted to touch on was they were talking about focusing on the past. I had a fifth grade reading level when I left high school, so, and I'm doing everything I can to overcome my past because of my dyslexia, and because you never get rid of that. It's always a part of you. So I'm doing everything I can to just work with it, and I'm so grateful for you actually reading this chapter, because it means a lot more coming from you. And I think I'm like all over the place right now. So one more thing I wanted to touch on was that if you focus on your past, if you keep one foot in your past and one foot in the future, you're actually peeing on the present, is one of the sayings I've heard. So, back to you, John.
Well, hey, Tracy, I love that. If you keep one foot in the past and one foot in the present, one foot in the past and one foot in the future, you're actually peeing on the present, which is actually very, very true. Very, very true. And let me just say, I really look forward to when I'm able to hear you speak, because your energy and who you are comes out in your speech patterns. So whatever challenges that you are facing as it pertains to your dyslexia, that is no hindrance to who you are and to what you will be able to accomplish within life, and certainly within the home business game, because quite frankly, the home business game is all about communication. It's all about connecting. It's just about, you know, showing people that you are real and who you are. All I can say, Tracy, is that you are special. Period. Now, folks, let me just warn you. The guy that's about to come on is just energy incarnate. Let's hear it from Rick Martin.
Good morning, my friend. John Chapman, how are you, sir? John?
Yeah, brother.
That's fantastic. Wonderful. I couldn't hear. I wanted you to acknowledge before I continue. You know, you have an inspiring way about you, and you're in a wonderful company. Milo C. Jones, that's a man who was a crippled man. You're in a company that became very wealthy by making, he's the gentleman who formed the Bacon. It was Milo C. Jones. There's two other gentlemen that became very good friends in the entertainment industry, and they had a speech impediment, and that is none other than our former governor of California. And the incredible other gentleman, Rocky, the man, Mr. Rocky, had an incredible speech impediment. You know, those two gentlemen is a story. We love telling stories, and I believe in stories. I think none of us can control timing, but we can control how we relate to people. And I believe if we can connect and relate to people, it's a wonderful thing. When Sylvester Stallone was a young boy, he had some afflictions, and he overcame those afflictions. But what was most interesting, he used to write these short plays, but he had a burning desire at an early age that he knew he would get into the movies. And it's a very interesting way how Rocky movie started and how that was all formed from the ground up and was his desire. At one point in his life, he had no money to at the point where he would sell his wife or pawn his wife's jewelry. In fact, you can tell what happened after that. I think they parted way. And what was interesting, he had a dog. He had a dog that he loved so much because the dog gave him unconditional love. And interestingly enough, he said it was the lowest point in his life. He was standing out of a liquor store, and he bargained with a gentleman. He was asking $50 for the dog, and he bargained for $25. Now, he had went to a movie, not a movie, but he had went to an actual boxing game where Muhammad Ali was fighting a Caucasian man who kept on coming forward while he was being bludgeoned. I mean, busted up in the face, but the guy kept on going. He kept on coming. So that inspired Rocky to write the movie in 20 hours that night. He went to offer this movie to many different studios. Some turned it down, said it was predictable. But then he found gold at one place where they said, yes, we will have this movie. We will put it into action. We will pay you, I believe, the sum of $165,000. They wanted somebody else to play, but Sylvester Stallone said, I am Rocky, not someone else. He said, are you kidding me? He said, if you believe that way, we're not going to put some no-name person in the movie. We expect this would not work. So he said, if that's the way you believe, you can't have my script. And he walked out. They were so interested in that particular script, they turned around and offered him over $300,000. Now, this guy had no money. He had no money, my friends. But he had that burning desire to achieve his outcome. So they said, fine, we'll pay you $35,000. Reduced to $35,000. And he had the part in the movie. What was the most interesting thing, though? He went back to get his beloved dog. He saw this guy a couple of days or a few hours. I don't remember exactly. But he was out there waiting and hoping to see this guy. He said, you remember me? I was down on my wits. No money. I know you love this dog, but I'll give you $100 back for this dog. This gentleman said, no, sir, that's impossible. This dog belongs to me, and you cannot get him back. To make the short story, when you knew your outcome, the outcome was he had to have this dog. Do you know that this guy paid this gentleman $15,000 to get his dog back and a part in the movie? And that gentleman played also the dog. That dog was the dog, was Rocky's dog in the movie. That, to me, was one of the most incredible concentration in what you know what you want, what your outcome to be, willing to make the adjustments, knowing when things aren't going well, and to be flexible to adjust so you can get your outcome. And that's a wonderful story. And John Chatman, I'm very, very impressed with your attitude and your determination, sir, to do, and here you are today. That's the most incredible feat that you have put together. So back to you, Mr. Chatman, and have a day filled with opulence, my friends. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Rick. Rick, you rock, brother. You know what? When you come out on a daily basis and you preach prosperity, it is one of the highlights of my day. A day filled with opulence. A day filled with opulence. That is such, you know, that is not just a tagline. That is the truth there. And you know, Rocky and Sylvester Stallone, his hard luck story, his determination, his desire, his burning desire to get that story across, and his ability to stand fast when he was broke. This guy was broke. he sold his best friend for $25, and then he turned down $300,000. You know, the integrity of his desire, the integrity of his dream, the integrity of his commitment to his vision. I don't know if I, on a personal basis, would have been in that same situation if I could have held out. But the bottom line is that I'm thankful that he did, because he gives us an incredible example of what can happen to a person that has developed a burning desire to achieve success, which is what he did. So who is our next caller?
Hey, John. Free, as free as the grass grows, as free as the wind blows, born free to follow your heart. Good morning, John. How are you?
Good
this
morning.
This is Neville. This is Neville. How are you today?
I'm doing incredible, sir. How are you doing today?
Magnificent. I am so blessed. It is unbelievable. I'm good and getting better. It is such a wonderful day, wonderful time to hear you. I missed your opening dialogue about your history and stuttering and so forth, but I can empathize with you. Seriously, I can really empathize with you. And following Rick is hard, but he missed another great actor. That was who had a stuttering problem, serious stuttering problem, and became one of the most renowned voices in the movies, James Earl Jones. He also stuttered, as myself, who also stuttered, tremendously, tremendous. It was so bad, when I spoke, I spat on people everywhere, and took a week for the words to come out. And so I can recall the last time I truly stuttered was in high school. I think I might have said this before to someone. And we're reading Richard III. In the day we grew up, we did English literature. So you had to read and enunciate, and you had to be precise in your grammar and your dialogue and your speech. And there were 36 of us in that class. I can recall that. And all these kids are brilliant and did everything well. I did most things well, except I could not talk. I just went stupid when it came to speaking and so forth. And after 35 people had read their partial acts of the play, I was told to read. And I think even the teacher laughed when she said that, because she knew, here comes the destruction of the class of all the good things they had done. And through the grace of God, I swore to myself that at that moment, that I not stutter. And I got up, and I believe I shut out everything around me. I saw nothing but the page and echoing the words in my mind. And when I'd read, I might have read maybe 10 acts. I finished the play. And when I looked up, the whole room was filled with students and teachers from other classes who had come in. And they gave me a resounding clap and everything after that. And since that day, I thank God, I have not in any way stuttered in any way compared to that. There are times when you cannot enunciate a word, but there comes a time. So, yes. And I heard the young lady spoke of herself and how she stuttered and her mother helped. It's when we go through certain things, it allows us to empathize more with people as we come along. I recall my eldest son. I believe he was dyslexic. I mean, he still is dyslexic. However, they didn't recognize in school, but I realized certain things weren't right with how he did things. And he tried. And I personally took it to work with him, because after sending him to different programs, it didn't help. I personally worked with him. And today the young man is doing extremely well for himself in his company and his business and everything else. And now, like you said, you take your children out with you where you go and let them speak. I took my children with me. I was a member of the Lions Club. And wherever I went, or when I played ball or whatever I did, I took my sons with me. I taught them to be outgoing, to speak well, because I knew the frustrations and things that I had suffered through. So, yes, we all have issues at some time or the other, either in our past, present, or maybe in the future. But we must have that burning desire. You spoke about Rocky. I watched his movies, and believe me, in one movie when he was talking to his son, I can't remember the name of that Rocky movie, when he said, you just take the punch and you keep on coming. You just take it and you keep on coming. You keep on going. There's no quitting you. There's no quitting you. And then in his Rambo, when many people think these movies are not brilliant in what goes on, in there he made a statement. He said, they told him, you have all the modern equipment. We're going to back you up with all the things you need and the best that you will have. And one guy told him that. And he said in reply, I thought the best thing I had was my mind. So, John, I thank you this morning. I love you, young man. You're doing great. And listen, God bless, and back to you.
All righty, Neville. You know what? I would have never known that. I would have never known that about you. You know, what I know of you is just that you are inspiring, that you are fun to be around, that you have an incredible, incredible singing voice, that you bring joy when you speak. And that, my friend, that is my perception of you. So very, very powerful. Who's next?
Hey, John, this is Steven. I just want to say something real quick.
Go right ahead, Steve.
Tracy, if you're still on the line, what an inspiration you are to me. Your story and the way you shared it with us today, great job. That story today, Tracy, is what's going to get me through the rest of the day. And I wish you the best, and hopefully I have the pleasure and honor of being able to meet you and talk to you. Back to you, John.
You rock, brother. You rock. So there was a young lady that was coming out with you.
It's Lindy.
Hey, Wendy. Rock and roll, Wendy.
Lindy with an L.
Lindy.
That's okay.
Go right ahead, Lindy.
I just love that all of you are coming out and in our safe place, because that's what we are here. We are a family, and you are safe here. You know, Moses himself was also a stutterer. God called him to lead the people to the promised land, and he tried to talk him out of it because he was not an eloquent speaker. So kudos to all of you. What inspiration on this call. You guys are awesome. But I wanted to tell you a quick story. My niece, she was married for 5 years, and they'd been trying to have a child, and they never could get pregnant. And they had almost decided to stop trying and just adopt when she became pregnant. And 2 months into her pregnancy, she developed some kind of a growth that she was bleeding so profusely. They were fearful of her life, and her doctor wanted to give her a complete hysterectomy to save her life, and she absolutely said, no, this is my baby, a gift from God, and everything's going to be okay. In spite of what it looked like on the surface, she was tapping into the spiritual. And to make a long story short, they sent her to a specialist a week after her doctor told her this, and when she got to his office, she was healed. She had a baby, a beautiful baby boy. She had another baby boy. And had she listened to the doctor, she never could have had her family that she dreamed of her whole life. So just remember, the spiritual realm always trumps the physical realm. You know, what you see can sometimes be deceiving. So just believe, you know, stay on that higher vibration, and you can have your dreams. Thank you, everybody. Back to you, John. You're doing a great job.
Thank you, Lindy. Wow, that is sort of crazy, guys. Here, give me one moment. All righty, my friends. Wow, what an incredible opportunity to come together and mastermind, to come together
and hear stories of inspiration, to come together and learn and grow and truly think and grow rich with each other. You know, that's one of the things that I just want to get across to everyone here. When I first started this call, I was not in a good place. You know, I had failed, and I failed some more. I failed. My first several years in the network marketing game weren't anything special other than the fact that I made no money. I literally made no money. 2 years in the game, I made no money. $0, two companies, nothing. It got so bad that my honey, the mother of my children, the woman that I love, actually sat me down on one summer day, and she looked into my eyes as she was holding my hands, and I could tell that there was something really hard on her heart, something that just would not go away because I could see it in her eyes. And she looked up at me and she said, "John." I said, "Yes, babe." And she said, "Are you sure this is the right thing for you? Because you've been doing this for 2 years, for over 2 years now, and nothing's come of it. I see you going back and forth 40 miles to the meeting, staying after the meeting. I see you getting up at 5 a.m. to cold call people on the other coast. I see you staying on the phone till 9 p.m. to cold call people in Hawaii. I see how hard you work, and I see how much heartache it's causing you, because you could see the desire of me wanting it. She could see how bad I want it. And it finally just got to her, because she knew how much pain I was in. And when I realized, you know, when I heard what she was saying, and then I heard my response, my response to her that I heard me speak. It was a very surreal moment. It's probably one of the most surreal moments of my life, other than my child's birth, was I heard myself saying, "If someone else can do this, so can I. I will be a success in this industry. I will." That truth that came out of me was something that I knew. It had been developed. It was my white hot burning desire to create success within this industry. It was a major definite purpose, even before I knew about what a major definite purpose was. And just because I had that didn't mean that it started to click right away. As a matter of fact, my fortunes, my success that I'm experiencing right now, that I will continue to experience, did not come about until I tapped into this call, until I tapped into the very call that you're listening to right now. And for me to be able to stand here and relate this to you is really a culmination, because when I came to this call, I was a very different person. And it was only because of the many blessings that I have received from participating in this call, my friends that I've made, the business partners that I've made, the growth that I have been able to experience. And that right there, if you do nothing else in your day, just make sure that you tap into this call, because it can change you. Make sure that you're speaking up. Make sure that you're doing the reading. Make sure that you are experiencing everything that this call has to offer. just like Wendy said, we are a safe place. It doesn't matter which company that you were coming from. It doesn't matter what else that is going on in your life. You can come here, and you can truly, truly think and grow rich. I hope all of you have an incredible day, a day filled with opulence. I will speak to you soon. Ciao for now.